Donnie Bullard stood in the open front door of the hotel, his hat in his hands. Frank thought he looked just like a scared kid, 15 years old, in a peck of trouble, and knows it.
Miss Julie, I disobeyed my dad and run off from home to tell you I aim to do the right thing.
What happened to your face, Donnie?
My dad, he hit me a couple of times when I told him what I was fixing to do. Then he forbade me from coming to see about Katie.
What do you think is the right thing to do, Donnie?
Well, me and Katie talked about it, ma'am. I aim to marry her.
Doc Everett walked to within hearing distance and stopped.
I see. Your right hand is swollen and the knuckles raw, Donnie. What happened to your hand?
Well, Miss Julie, I hauled off and hit my dad after he punched me a couple of times and called Katie a dirty little whore. I mean, I knocked the stuffing out of him. Knocked him flat on his behind, I did. And then I took off. I lit me a shuck out of there. That's how come my hand is kind of swole.
Julie had to cover her mouth with a hand to hide her quick smile at Donnie's explanation. Frank cut his eyes to Doc Everett and saw that the man had a wide grin on his face.
Well, Donnie, how do you plan on supporting Katie?
I reckon I'll get me a job, Miss Julie. I don't rightly know where, but I'll work. I'm not a bit lazy.
Donnie looked at Frank.
Mr. Morgan, ain't it?
That's right, son.
Could I work at your ranch, sir? I'm a right good hand.
I'm sure you are, Donnie. And you've taken a big step toward becoming a grown-up man by coming here this morning. Your father should have been proud of you.
My dad stood at the door of the ranch house and disowned me. He screamed it out real loud. Everybody heard it, excepting the hired guns who was already on the move to attack this town. He said if I ever set foot on 45 range again, he'd horsewhip me and leave me for the buzzards to eat my eyes.
How about your mother?
She's scared of my dad. She won't say nothing against him.
Frank glanced at the eastern sky. Silver was just beginning to push away the blackness of night.
I'm worried about Betty Lou Gilmore, scared what her paw might do to her.
That's a legitimate concern.
Doc Everett stepped forward.
Ken Gilmore has a really bad temper.
I know Betty Lou's been going to see Doc Woods of late. Something sure ailing her.
I wonder why. Oh, come on, Donnie. Let's go see Katie. I'm sure seeing you will make her feel better.
I'd better get back to the wounded. I've still got some lead to dig out.
Like the good book says, time to break down, time to build up.
Frank stepped out of the hotel and stood alone on the boardwalk for a few minutes. Fresh dirt covered the blood spots in the street. Many of the locals returned home to wash up, have breakfast, dress, and get ready for the day's business. Some workmen already labored at boarding up the few shop windows broken in the raid. Frank looked up the street and watched as a paint pony walked slowly into view, the rider slumping in the saddle as if asleep or very weary. As the pony drew closer, Frank could see the rider was a woman. He stepped off the boardwalk and into the street, walking toward the pony and rider. He could now tell the rider was a girl in her teens. He grabbed the reins just as she began to fall from the saddle. Frank caught the girl in his arms. There was blood on the front of her red and white checkered shirt, and the back of the shirt was ripped and bloody.
Get Doc Everett, hurry!
Yes, sir.
Frank carried the girl to the boardwalk and set her down, holding her upright with one arm.
Betty Lou Gilmore.
Her face is all swollen and bruised, and her back is a mess.
I see that. Can you carry her over to my office?
Sure.
Frank waited outside the doctor's office and smoked a hand rolled until Everett walked outside.
Her father beat that girl with his fists, then used a quirt on her back. The rotten son of a bitch.
Nice family. How bad hurt is she?
Nothing is broken that I could tell.
This is the girl who's been seeing the doctor in hell?
The same.
And?
I'd say she was about 3 or 4 months along.
I reckon we'll have us a double wedding.
It better be quick, Frank.
I'll talk to Julie about it.
Then there's the matter of what the hell a couple of 15-year-old boys are gonna do to support a family.
They can farm and ranch.
For you?
Reckon so. All the sections I bought got a hell of a spread. Nothing like the acreage the folks up at the north end have, but I figure it's close to 2,000 acres, maybe a little more than that.
Then you're really planning on staying?
Hope so, Doc. Sure gonna try. Nothing else, I'll have me someplace I can return to now and then. For now, I'll arrange for a couple hundred head of cattle to be brought in for me and start the beginnings of a herd. I heard about a couple more sections of land that's up for sale. I'll look into that.
Good, Frank. You need some place to return to now and then.
You sound as if you don't think I can do it, Doc.
Do you?
The doctor turned and walked away. Frank watched the doctor go, then went in search of Julie. Frank found Julie with the kids, all four of them, in the doctor's small infirmary. Two of the beds were filled, with Betty Lou and Phil, both of them sitting up. Julie looked up when Frank opened the door and waved him in.
We're going to have a double wedding, Frank.
That's wonderful, Julie. When?
As quickly as possible. Probably within 2 or 3 days. It'll be at the church.
Well, I'll certainly be there.
They'll all stay with me until they can find places of their own.
Frank nodded, not sure exactly what to say. Things were happening awfully fast.
Are you hungry, Frank?
I could eat.
Then let's leave the kids alone and have breakfast.
On the short walk over to the cafe, Julie shared her concern.
Oh, I don't know what else to do, Frank.
There isn't anything else, except hope for the best for all of them.
Thank God you're here, though.
Frank experienced some sudden and strange emotions at that statement. He wasn't sure how to respond. He figured the best thing he could do was keep his mouth shut, so he did.
My house is going to be crowded.
Sure will be.
You and I can work something out, though, right?
Sure we can.
Good. That certainly takes a load off my mind.
As Frank helped her up onto the boardwalk, he couldn't help thinking that life can sure get complicated in a hurry. After breakfast, Julie returned to the kids. Frank walked to the livery to check on Horse.
Morgan! Where are you?
Frank stepped out of the stable to find Bunyan, the sawmill owner, pointing up the street. About a dozen men were riding slowly up Main Street.
Gilmore and Bullard are in the front! And I don't think those men with them are regular cowboys!
Frank stepped up onto the boardwalk and walked toward the approaching riders. From long habit, he slipped the leather thong from the hammer of his peacemaker the instant he spotted the riders. As they drew closer, Frank could pick out several men in the group with the stamp of hired guns on them. He knew one of the men personally, Al Chambers. Al was quick and mean, with a dozen kills to his credit. On the other side of the street, John Simmons walked toward his bank.
Simmons!
Banker Simmons stopped and turned, facing the street when Gilmore called out his name.
Kenneth, very surprised to see you in town.
I come to fetch my daughter home, John.
Well, that's up to her, Kenneth. Personally, I don't think she wants to return to your ranch.
She doesn't have a damn thing to say about it.
Doc Everett stepped out of his office.
She can't travel yet. Won't be able to for several days. She's in a lot of pain and I've given her a sedative, so why don't you go away and take your hired guns with you?
Why don't you go to hell, Doc? Nobody runs us out of any town. And I've come to take my son back home.
No! You disowned me, remember?
Bullard looked up to see his son shouting from a second-story window in the hotel.
Get your butt down here, boy!
Forget it!
Suddenly, as if on a silent cue, both sides of the street were lined with citizens, all carrying rifles and shotguns.
This town is dead! I'll destroy it and everyone in it!
The locals all raised their weapons.
Easy, Ken.
Frank and Al Chambers were looking at one another, engaging in a silent exchange of potentially deadly glances.
Betty Lou! Get out here! We're going home!
You go home! You go home without me!
God damn you, girl!
Al Chambers slowly swung out of the saddle and stepped up onto the boardwalk. Frank Morgan faced the man, the wide street between them.
Donnie! Come on, boy! Stop this silliness now! It's time for you to come on home!
Go to hell!
The two ranchers exchanged glances.
This ain't working. I told you it wouldn't, Don.
Take your hired guns and leave this town. You're welcome here anytime you want to come in peace.
Nobody tells me what to do in this valley, Simmons. And that sure as hell includes you.
Don't be a fool, Don. We could have the most prosperous communities in this territory if you'd stop trying to fight growth.
Damn you to hell, banker.
You understand the reason those shopkeepers and sheep herders and clod hoppers all of a sudden got some courage.
Al Chambers pointed toward Frank.
Mr. Bullard, you and Mr. Gilmore, pull your men back some, out of the line of fire. I'll take care of Morgan right here and now.
Now see here.
Shut up, John! You got your gun slick, didn't you? Well, we got a right to ours, don't we?
It's all right, John. I'll handle this. The rest of you citizens, stay out of this.
Back up, boys! This is between Al and Morgan. We're out of it, no matter how it turns out. That fair enough, John?
Fair enough, if that's the way Frank wants it.
It is.
The ranchers and their hired guns backed away, leaving Al Chambers standing alone, facing Frank. The long lines of civilians on both sides of the street began moving aside, not wanting to get caught in the line of fire.
I've waited a long time for this, Morgan.
Well, your wait is over, Al. Make your play.
All in good time, Morgan. I want to see you sweat some.
Because I'm facing you, Al?
Al nodded his head.
You son of a bitch! I'm gonna shoot you in the belly, Morgan. You're gonna die hard and long, you bastard. How funny is that? Did you hear me, Morgan?
Of course I heard you, Al. Half the town did.
Then drag iron, Morgan. Damn you, pull on me.
After you, Al.
Asshole!
This is boring me, Al. You don't do something pretty soon, I'm gonna doze off right here in the street.
Julie and the kids watched from a second floor window. They were standing back so Frank could not see them and be distracted.
Miss Julie, Al Chambers is awful fast. Him and some of the other gunfighters is getting triple fighting wages to deal with Mr. Morgan.
I'm sure Frank knows that, Donnie.
He's a real nice man, Miss Julie. I'd hate for something bad to happen to him.
So would I, Donnie.
Damn you, Morgan!
Al reached for his gun. A hole appeared in the center of Al Chambers' shirt before he could clear leather.
Sweet Jesus! You bastard! You killed me!
I just finished what you started.
Al tried to get to his feet. He struggled for a few seconds, then sat back down in the dirt, blood leaking from his mouth.
Oh, you bastard!
The ranchers, Bullard and Gilmar, sat their saddles and stared grim-faced at the scene before them. Frank stepped back up onto the boardwalk just as Doc Everett walked out of his office and over to the downed gun hand. The doctor squatted down and tried to open Al's shirt. Al slapped his hand away.
Leave me alone, you bastard!
With much pleasure.
Look at him, Doc!
He doesn't want me to check him!
Maybe now you can check him.
The doctor knelt down and quickly checked the fallen gunfighter. He looked up at the mounted ranchers.
He's dead.
Oh, shit. Couple of you boys pick him up and lay him across his saddle. We'll bury him back across the line.
Frank was standing on the boardwalk, leaning against a support post, rolling a cigarette, watching the scene in the street. Gilmar glanced over at Frank.
It isn't over, Morgan! It isn't over until I get what I want.
It should be over, Gilmar. You're fighting a losing battle. All that's gonna happen is a lot of people, good and bad, are gonna die.
We didn't have nothing to do with them night riders who tried to burn the town. You can believe that or not.
You're saying it was all trainers doing?
I'm just saying we didn't have nothing to do with it, that's all.
Al Chambers' body was tied belly down across his saddle.
Let's go, boys.
He glanced over at Frank.
It ain't over, Morgan.
I'll be around, Bullard.
You believe what Bullard said about the Knight Riders, Frank?
No. His son said their confrontation took place just after the Riders left to attack the town. Bullard's a liar.
I've known that for years. How do you feel, Frank?
No different than I felt 10 minutes ago, Doc.
I've seen a lot of death in my time. I've never really become hardened to it. My so-called callous attitude is meant to cover that up.
There's a question in there somewhere, right, Doc?
We've talked about this before, Frank. Killing doesn't seem to bother you.
First time I shot a man, Doc, I nearly puked my guts out. I was just a kid, about Donnie's age. Second time, it was easier. My philosophy is simple. I use a gun to protect my life, my loved ones, my property. I won't take much talking down to, and I won't tolerate people putting hands on me. If I pull a gun, I'm ready to use it, and usually do.
And if everyone shared your philosophy, Frank?
It'd be a hell of a world.
See you later, Frank.
I'll be around.
Frank watched the doctor walk away back to his clinic. then stood and watched as the town got back to normal and stores began opening for the day's business. Fresh dirt again covered bloodstains in the street, and Al Chambers became another short-lived memory in a western town. The incident would be talked about for a few days. Then something else would happen to push it out of the citizens' memories. Frank walked over to the hotel to have a chat with Julie. They had a lot of things to discuss, and not much time to do it. Several of the town ladies met with Julie about the wedding plans, and Julie told Frank, in so many words, to go peddle his papers for a few days. Frank did so gratefully, heading back to his place to check on things. He had just finished forking some hay for the horses when Harry Clay rode up. Frank greeted the man as he stepped from the saddle.
Frank, can I talk some business with you?
Sure. Want some coffee?
That'd hit the spot, I reckon.
I was thinking about it myself. Come on into the house and I'll make a spot.
The men talked of small things while the coffee was boiling, then got down to business over mugs of steaming strong coffee.
I got 2 sections of land, Frank. Good land, nearabouts all of it, with good water.
I know, Harry. I've ridden over it.
Well, me and the wife talked it over, and we want to pull out.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I got friends in Idaho who want me to come join them in a farming venture. I want to go.
Idaho's right pretty country, Harry. I spent some time there.
You want to buy my land, Frank?
Well, I reckon I might, if the price was right.
I won't hold you up on it. I'll make it fair.
When do you want to leave?
The day we sign the papers.
All right, let's talk about it.
Within 5 minutes, the men agreed on a price. Frank and Harry Clay would meet at the bank the next day to finish the deal.
Yeah, this makes you the biggest landowner in the South Section, Frank.
I reckon that's true. For a man who doesn't know much about farming, I'm sure as hell land rich.
For a man who might suddenly have a whole passel of kids to look after, you're going to need it.
News gets around, doesn't it?
The boy and girl all right after them beatings?
Oh, yeah. They're both up and around and healing. They're young, they'll heal fast.
Well, see you at the bank in the morning, then.
See you there, Harry.
The price the men settled on for the 2 sections of land was more than fair and wouldn't even put a dent into Frank's finances, but he shook his head as Harry Clay rode away.
What am I getting into here? What's wrong with you?
Wolf's ears were back. The hair on his back stood up.
Okay, I get the message.
Frank picked up a rifle from the gun rack in the living room and walked to a front window looking out. He could see nothing out of place or anything that might pose danger. Still, Wolf continued to growl low in his throat. Frank eared back the hammer on the .44-40. Something or somebody was definitely out there, and whoever or whatever it was presented danger. Wolf didn't growl at friends. Frank looked at the big cur. Wolf was baring his teeth in a snarl.
Easy now, settle down. You're staying in here with me.
Wolf looked at him.
I mean it, you hardhead. Settle down.
Frank waited close by the window, his rifle ready, with no idea who the person lying in wait outside his house might be. Frank knew he still carried a bounty on his head, maybe more than one.
I'll burn you out, you son of a bitch! I'll make you come out and face me!
Oh, hell, not him again.
It was the loud-mouthed young man from Butte, Rob something or another. The townspeople told Frank that Rob rode out as soon as his hip wound allowed him to swing into the saddle.
What the hell do you want, boy?
I want to kill you!
Well, you're not going to do that. Go home, hang up your guns, and live a long life.
Hell with you, Morgan! I'm going to kill you!
Damn.
Frank didn't want to kill the young man. It would suit Frank if he never used his gun again. But he knew, with his reputation, the odds against him ever being able to take off his gun and live in peace were long indeed.
Go away, Rob. Do yourself a favor and ride out.
After I kill you!
Boy, this isn't gonna happen. You're signing your own death warrant.
You say, Morgan. I say different.
I beat you before, boy. What makes you think this time will be any different?
It'll be different, Morgan. I know it will.
All right, boy. I'm coming out. Just hang on.
Instead of going out the front door, Frank took off his spurs and quietly slipped out the back. He looped a wide circle, coming out behind the barn. Frank made no sound as he slipped up behind the young would-be gunman.
What's taking so long, Morgan? You too old and scared to move out here?
Frank tapped Rob on the shoulder.
Huh?
Rob spun around. Frank butt-stroked him with the .44-40, and Rob went down and out cold. When Rob came to a few minutes later, he sat tied to a straight-backed kitchen chair. Frank was looking at him.
The hell am I gonna do with you, boy?
Turn me loose!
Are you gonna behave?
Turn me loose and find out!
Frank loosened the rope on Rob's wrists and backed up.
You're free.
Rob rubbed his wrists and glared at Frank.
Now what?
Give me my guns.
Not a chance.
I'll get some more guns.
Why?
A man's got to have guns, Morgan.
I'll agree with that. To defend himself, but not go looking for trouble. That's what you do, hunt for trouble. Why? You think using a gun makes you a big man? I'll tell you what, Rob, and I'll try to make this as plain as I can. I'm real tired of messing around with you. I put my life on the line 3 times messing with you. No more. This is the last time. If I see you again, I'm gonna kill you. You finally, and I hope for the last time, understand that.
I reckon.
Good. You want some coffee?
Huh?
Coffee. Out of that pot on the stove yonder.
You're offering me a cup of coffee?
Yeah. Do you want a cup?
That would hit the spot for sure.
Fine. At least we got that settled.
I reckon after I drink this, Mr. Morgan, I'll drift on out of here.
Good. I've got enough to worry about without having to put up with you.
I've decided to let you live.
That's right, nice of you. That really eases my mind.
I thought it would.
Frank decided right then that Rob wasn't playing with a full deck of cards. Maybe his mama dropped him on his head when he was little.
You want a grub steak to get you going, boy?
For a fact, I ain't got no money.
Frank dug into his pocket and gave him $20.
That ought to get you a ways, boy. A long ways, I hope.
Right nice of you, Mr. Morgan.
Think nothing of it.
Frank sat out on the porch for a time after Rob rode out. He felt good about not having to face the young fool and shoot him.
Stay gone, boy. Live a long life. And stay the hell away from me.
Frank stepped inside to get himself another cup of coffee, Wolf padding along with him. As he poured his coffee, Frank decided to fix a snack. He tossed some wood in the stove and put some bacon on to fry, then sliced some bread. He was pumping him some water at the sink when he saw movement in the timber at the side of the clearing. Wolf's head came up.
Okay, settle down. It's that damn Rob again.
He pulled the skillet off the stove and picked up his rifle.
Man can't even fix him a bite to eat. Damn!
Frank hit the floor, belly down. He shoved Wolf behind the wood box and told him to stay there.
It's about to get real interesting around here.
Frank lay on the floor and let the rifleman blast away for a couple of minutes. The rounds busted windows, tore through parts of the house, broke lamps, and clanged off the stove. Wolf lay safe behind the full firewood box. Frank crawled in front of a full book cabinet, the volume stopping any rounds blowing through the walls of the house. When the gunman paused to reload, Frank crawled to a window and cautiously looked out. The first thing he saw was the leg of a man sticking out from behind a rack of cut firewood. Frank put a .44-40 round into the man's knee. Then, before the echo of the rifle died away, he quickly shifted position to the rear of the house.
He's in the front! Fly with the power!
The riflemen directed their fire to the front of the house, the rounds from rifles blowing through several inches of wood. Frank slipped to the back porch behind a stack of firewood. He chanced a quick look around the edge of the stack and saw a man fully exposed, standing at the edge of the barn. Frank put a round into the man's belly that doubled the gun slick over and set him on the ground on his butt, both hands holding his perforated midsection. Then, before the rifle fire could be directed to the back porch, Frank crawled quickly into the kitchen.
Help me! I'm hard hit and hurting awful!
Frank jumped to his feet and blew 3 quick rounds out the kitchen window. He didn't think he managed to hit anything, but he did send several gun hands diving for the ground. Frank moved to the living room and peeked out through a bullet-torn hole in the wall. No one was leaving cover to help the badly wounded man.
Don't leave me here, boy. I'm done for. I don't want to lay here and rot. Bury me proper, you hear?
Gather up your wounded and get the hell out of here. I won't fire on you.
This ain't over, Morgan.
Yeah, I know. You'll get me. I heard it all before.
Morgan!
Right here. Haven't gone anywhere.
Get out while you can. That's a fair warning. This thing is bigger than you know. Ain't no reason for you to die for a bunch of sodbusters and ribbon clerks that really don't give a damn about you.
This is my home.
This is Dave Clayton, Morgan.
Been a long time, Dave.
5 or 6 years. Lomax is on his way in, and so is Jones. Thought you'd better know that.
Lomax and Jones were hired killers. 2 damn tough hombres out of West Texas.
Tell your bosses they can bring in all the hired guns they can find, Dave. I'm not leaving.
Ain't no law gonna interfere in this, Morgan.
I know that.
All right. You've been warned. It's open season from now on.
Works both ways, Dave. You better give that some thought.
We're going, Morgan. For now, anyways.
I hear ya. Take your dead and wounded and clear out. I won't fire on you this time.
The wounded were collected, and the gunmen rode away. Frank looked over at Wolf, who was peering around the edge of the wood box, as if silently asking, what the hell is going on here?
Come on out, fella. It's all right.
Then Frank walked outside and around the clearing, kicking dirt over the bloodstains.
I think, Wolf, it's time for me to go on the hunt. And I think I'll do just that. Starting right after I make me a little trip into town.
Frank left the Big Appaloosa ground-drained about a mile from the main house of the Trainer Spread, in a stand of timber by a brook. He slipped on moccasins, stowing his boots in the saddlebags. He took his rifle, a bandolier of ammunition, a spare pistol, and a cowhide backpack.
Now then, Colonel Trainer, it's your turn, you arrogant son of a bitch.
He checked his pocket watch, closing in on midnight. What was it someone called this time of night? The witching hour? Something like that.
Call it the mischief hour, and I'm the mischief maker.
Frank headed toward the complex of buildings, moving as silently as the night. It was a few minutes before midnight when he reached the buildings and slipped out of his backpack, laying it carefully on the ground. He opened the flap, and in the faint light from the moon and starlit sky, he smiled as he pulled out a 3-stick bundle of dynamite, the sticks capped, fused, and tied together, ready to light. Frank had 6 single sticks ready to go, as well as several 2-stick bundles and several more 3-stick bundles. He slipped to the rear of the bunkhouse and planted one of the charges with a long fuse. The 3-minute fuse would give him time to get to the main house and plant a charge at the front door of Colonel Trainer's mansion. The huge house was made of stone, so Frank didn't think the charge would do much damage except to Trainer's ego. As arrogant as Trainer was, Frank figured it would be amusing to give Trainer's ego a big boot in the butt. After planting the charges, Frank slipped through the night to a stone fence Trainer had built around the several acres containing his mansion and private barn. Frank settled down behind the low fence and waited for the fun to start. The charge at the rear of the bunkhouse went first, the explosion shattering the tranquility of the night. Half of the roof collapsed, and a major part of the rear wall blew inward, the concussion blowing out all the windows in the building.
Good God! What the hell happened?
Somebody get this crap off of me! I got part of the damn roof of my legs! One of them busted! Oh, God! A damn bee fell on me!
The dynamite at the front door of the mansion blew and took the door out, blowing it off its hinges and into the fancy foyer of the home. Trainer must have been walking down the stairs from the 2nd floor when the charge went off.
Son of a goddamn bitch! What the goddamn hell is going on?
Frank struggled to keep from laughing out loud as a very disheveled-looking Trainer appeared in what was left of the front entrance. He waved at the dust cloud.
Someone answer me! What the hell is going on?
Frank edged away from the fence over to the huge main corral and opened the gate. Frank's cries sent several dozen horses bolting through the gate. They were gone into the night. The foreman, Tom Bracken, ran out of his quarters, dressed only in his long handles and hat. He was carrying his gun belt. Frank put a 44-40 round at the foreman's bare feet.
Shh!
she at?
Tom dropped his gun belt and hauled his butt back into his quarters. Frank lit a bundle of dynamite and tossed it into the center of the main compound. It landed in the bench area of a small gazebo. The violent concussion knocked a passel of hired guns sprawling on the ground just as they rounded the side of the house.
Get there and kill that son of a bitch! It's Morgan, goddammit!
Frank put a round into the stone entranceway and got what he hoped for. The bullet flattened, and part of it hit Traynor in the butt.
God! Holy crap! Goddamn holy crap!
Are you hit?
Hell yes, I'm hit!
Frank could see Jules running down the stairs and into the foyer. Frank put another round bouncing off the stone entrance to the mansion.
Jesus, I crashed!
Colonel Traynor leaped into the foyer, colliding with his son. Both of them went down in a heap on the floor. Staying low, the stone fence shielding him, Frank slipped around to the side of the huge house and chucked a sputtering stick of dynamite through an open window into the fancy living room. The charge blew out all the windows and destroyed the expensive chandelier, bringing it smashing to the floor. The rolling shockwave from the explosion hit Traynor and his son just as they were crawling to their feet in the foyer. The concussion knocked them both down again and rolled them across the floor.
Somebody kill that son of a bitch! $1,000 to the man who kills him!
Two hired guns jumped to their feet, six guns in their hands, and came charging across the yard. Frank knocked a leg out from under one with a well-placed round, and the second one decided the charge was really foolish. He hit the ground and rolled behind some lawn furniture. Frank lit two more sticks of dynamite and tossed them into the yard. A second before they blew, he was off and running into the night. He had done all he dared this trip.
God damn it! What am I paying you men for? Get after him, you bastards!
Where is he? I can't locate him!
Smiling, Frank melted into the darkness, carefully making his way toward his horse.
God damn it! Somebody kill that goddamn asshole!
All the horses are scattered, Mr. Traynor. It'll take us a while to round them all up.
Then get to it, for Christ's sake! Jesus H. Christ! Can somebody get into town? Get out the woods for me!
Where you hit?
In my ass, goddammit!
Now that was fun.
Frank reached his horse, cheerfully swung into the saddle, and rode away. As Frank headed home, a surprising thought jolted his reverie.
Whose lives will pay for this?
The news of the assault on the Traynor mansion and the shooting of the colonel in the butt spread quickly all over the south end of the valleys. Actually, Colonel Traynor was not shot in the ass. Doc Woods pulled a piece of rock knocked loose by the .44-40 round from the cowman's hind parts. But to those in the south part of the valleys, the original story was just too funny to die. Everyone in the town of Heaven felt sure Frank Morgan assaulted the Traynor estate, but Frank never admitted it. He just smiled when asked about it. Frank decided not to replace the broken windows in his house. Too much danger of them being shot out again. He boarded up the windows and left it at that. The double wedding went off as planned, but without the attendance of anyone from the north end of the valleys. The kids went off to an undisclosed destination for a honeymoon, while Frank hired a crew of workmen to build a house for the kids on some of his property. The boys would work the land on shares.
It's a fine thing you're doing, Frank. I don't know what I would have done without you.
The odds are against the kids making it, Julie, you know that. It's the least I could do to make things a bit easier for them.
The big three ranchers in the north end built bunkhouses and line shacks for their remaining full-time cowboys and moved them out of the ranch areas. The old bunkhouses were now occupied by hired guns.
It's gonna blow wide open pretty soon, Julie. The Lightning, Snake, and Diamond 45 brands are hired on full with gunfighters, or men who think they're gunfighters, mostly the latter. Although there are a few really bad hombres mixed up in the bunch.
And you think they'll do what?
I don't know for sure. I suspect they'll start raiding farms, driving people out.
Or killing them?
Yeah.
Maybe we should just sell out to them and get out. Let the ranchers have it.
Nobody runs me out of any place, Julie.
Oh, they've offered good money for the farms, or so I was told.
Good money is nothing compared to what these farms will bring over the years. Nothing at all.
You may be right, Frank. I was just talking to hear my head rattle.
And you were thinking about the kids, too, right?
Yes.
They've made their own beds now, Julie.
And now they have to lie in them, right?
I expect they've been doing quite a lot of that in the past few days.
Oh, you.
Come here, you.
Frank reached out and pulled her down to the sofa. And one thing led to another. The Robert Clements family lived and worked a farm in an isolated area miles from their nearest neighbor and half a day's ride from the town of Heaven. The hired guns of the Big Three ranchers struck there 1 week after the assault on Colonel Traynor's mansion. The mercenaries killed the entire Clements family. The house and barn was burned to ashes. The farm was so isolated, it took 2 days for anyone to notice. Frank was one of the half dozen men who rode out to the Clements place to help dig for the bodies.
The oldest girl is missing.
Lara?
Yeah, Josh. She was about 14 or 15. Pretty girl.
Them bastards dragged her off and took turns poking it to her. I knew it would come to this sooner or later. My wife was scared something like this was gonna happen. That's just about gonna do it for us. She'll insist we move on, and I'm ready.
I'll see if I can pick up a trail. There's no more I can do here.
I'll go with you.
All right, Richard.
Frank found tracks and began following them. Of course, the hoof prints headed north. Frank found the body of the young girl a few miles from the burned-out home. She was naked and had been used badly. Richard looked down at the battered body of the girl.
Dear God almighty, looks like they broke her neck after they'd done it to her.
Go back and get a wagon. Tell the others what we found. Have someone ride into town and get Doc Everett and the preacher. We'll bury her alongside what's left of her parents.
This is just about going to do it for some folks, Frank.
Are you among them?
I don't know. Depends on what my old woman has to say about it.
Give it some thought before you decide to leave.
Oh, I will. But my woman won't. I better go get the wagon.
Frank waited until the men arrived with the wagon and then took off following the tracks. When he got to the crossroads, he headed west, toward a general store cum saloon about 5 miles away. The old store was a favorite hangout for those hands north of the line. There were three horses tied out front, all wearing brands Frank didn't recognize. The horses all carried bedrolls behind the camels and full saddlebags. Frank tied horse in the rear of the store and walked into the saloon section through the back entrance. There were three men bellied up to the bar. The barkeep almost swallowed his cigar when he saw Frank. He got so excited he couldn't speak, only stare.
What the hell's the matter with you?
The barkeep pointed, and the men turned their heads.
Who wants to start it?
Nobody, Morgan. We're riding out of here. We stopped here for a drink and supplies.
You boys work for Traynor?
No, Gilmar. But one's just as bad as the other. We packed up and give our notice as soon as we heard what happened a couple of nights ago. Don't none of us want no part of nothing that evil.
You boys the only ones leaving?
Far as we know, Morgan. Drawing fighting wages to protect range is one thing. Even running out homesteaders is all right with us. But killing and raping is something else.
How many others who are taking fighting wages feel the same?
None. I reckon we're it.
Then you boys made the right decision.
I think so.
Who raped and killed that young girl?
It was men from the Big Three ranchers, all mixed up.
Frank moved closer to the men. They could all see Frank was ready for a showdown. It made them nervous. One of the three was sure to get led into Morgan if it came to gunplay. But they all knew before Morgan went down, he was sure to get led into all of them. No one wanted to risk that.
Give me some names.
Jules Traynor.
Traynor's son was in the bunch?
You bet he was. He's been part of nearly every raid against the Sodbusters. He's killed crazy, Morgan. He likes to hurt people.
And his father ain't much better.
Yeah, the apple sure didn't fall far from the tree in that family. The only is one with any sense at all is Traynor's wife. But she's so addled on laudanum, she don't know where she is a lot of the time.
There are two other kids, Vincent and the girl, Martha. How about them?
Just as bad. Vincent is sneaky and the girl is wild as a drunk buck. She'll head for the bushes with just about anyone if you get my drift. Something's wrong with that whole family.
He tapped the side of his head.
Up here.
You boys have a couple of drinks on me. Then ride out.
We'll do it, Morgan. Thanks. And you have good luck in your hunt, because you're sure gonna need it.
Morgan?
Yeah?
The colonel is killing mad about you attacking his mansion the other night, and about having to have Doc Woods dig out that piece of rock from his ass. He's done told his men to shoot you on sight.
Frank rode a few hundred yards away to a small stand of timber and dismounted, waiting and watching the old general store. He felt sooner or later some men from the Big Three would show up, and he would be ready when they did. Frank watched as the three hands walked out of the store and rode away. They were the smart ones, for Frank intended to find those who killed the farm family, then raped and killed the girl. When he did, Frank would let his 45 peacemaker mete out justice. He didn't wait long. About half an hour after the three men rode away, three others rode up to the general store, come saloon, Jules Traynor among them. The young man was dressed all in black, from his hat to his boots. His gun belt was studded with silver dollars, and he carried twin pistols, low and tied down.
Quite a fancy outfit.
Frank stepped into the saddle and rode down to the store, reining up in front. He walked in nonchalantly and stepped up to the bar.
Whiskey.
Jules and the two men with him were so stunned at seeing Frank, they stood for a moment, speechless and staring.
What's the matter, boys? Cat got your tongues?
None of the three replied. Frank noticed scratches on Jules' face, maybe made by fingernails.
What happened to your face, boy? You run into a briar patch?
Huh?
Your face, you stupid bastard.
Jules' mouth dropped open in shock. He was Colonel Traynor's son. No one ever talked to him in such a manner. The two men with Jules started to step away from the bar.
Stand still. That's better.
Frank lifted his glass of whiskey with his left hand and took a tiny sip.
This is rot gut. Nobody but a rummy like that scratch-faced little piece of shit would drink crap like that.
I'll pour you some of my special stock, Mr. Morgan. Sorry about that.
Forget it. I didn't really come in for a drink.
And why'd you come in?
I wanted to get a good close look at this scummy son of a bitch who would rape and kill a young girl.
Them's hard words, Morgan.
You don't like it, Dragiron.
You push hard, Morgan.
Yeah, I reckon I do. Now it's up to you.
I didn't rape nobody.
Maybe not. But your pet pig there did. Didn't you, Jules?
Well, she was asking for it. Every time I seen that girl, she was sashaying around, shaking her butt at me and batting her eyes, flirting with me. And then when I called her on it, she put up a fight.
After you had a hand in killing her mother, her father, her brothers, and sisters, you sorry piece of crap.
Well, to hell with you, Morgan!
Frank stepped away from the bar, his right hand near the butt of his peacemaker.
Make your play, Traynor.
I don't want to have to kill you, Morgan!
Oh, but I want to kill you, Jules. Yeah, I want to kill you. You're a damn coward. No, you're worse than that. You're a mommy and daddy's boy. You hide behind your name. You're nothing but a rotten, yellow, pansy son of a bitch.
Don't force me to kill you!
You boys in on this?
We didn't have nothing to do with no rape, Morgan. We left the girl with Jules and a couple of others, headed on back to the ranch after we set the place on fire. We thought the Nestors would get out. I didn't like it when I heard they burned up. As for Jules, he can saddle his own horses and stomp on his own snakes. He's a growed-up man.
What others? Give me names.
You shut up, Story.
You go to hell, Garner. It was Mike Reeves and some guy called Cullen.
You got a yellow streak in you, Story. I'm with you, Jules. Let's take him.
I'm out of this, Morgan.
Fine. You ready to die, Garner? If so, make your play.
Damn you, Morgan! Pull iron!
Frank hooked and drew clean and swift. His bullet hit Garner in the chest. The hired gun folded and sat down hard on the saloon floor, his own pistol still in leather.
I'm gone, Morgan. I'm clearing out.
Fine. Hit the trail. Don't look back.
Story walked out of the saloon and rode away. Garner sat on the floor, both hands pressed against the bleeding hole in his chest.
Damn you, Morgan. Damn you.
Frank slid his peacemaker back into leather and looked at Jules.
Your turn, Jules. Make your move.
You leave me alone, Morgan!
Kill the bastard, Jules.
I'm going home.
Back to hide behind your mommy's skirts, Jules.
You shut up. My dad will take care of you.
Your dad and his shot-up ass.
You can take him, Jules.
do it!
Shut up!
Drag iron, Jules.
No!
Come on, Jules. Show me how fast you are.
You stay away from me, Morgan. God damn you! Now you leave me alone, you hear?
You're real brave when it comes to beating up and raping young girls, Jules. But you got no guts when it comes to facing men, do you?
I'm as much a man as you, and I'll kill you someday, Morgan.
Why not today, Jules? Indians would say it's a good day to die. Are you afraid to die, Jules?
Kill him, Jules. Kill him for me. I'm done for, boy. Kill him.
You shut up! Don't you tell me what to do!
Garner couldn't hear him. He was dead.
Just you and me now, Jules. Better draw, and you better make your first shot count.
Jules backed up. Frank moved another step toward the young man. The bartender stood and watched in silence. He wasn't about to get involved in this fracas. Jules backed up against the wall. He was trapped.
Now, you damn worthless piece of crap. Now, what are you gonna do?
Jules lunged at Frank in hopes of knocking him down and getting to the open door of the building.
How many times did you hit that young girl, Jules?
God damn you, they wasn't nothing but nesters. They got what they deserved. They ain't worthy people.
Frank put the toe of his boot in Jules' belly, knocking the wind out of him and laying him back on the floor, gasping for breath. Frank reached down and hauled the young man to his feet. He jerked Jules' guns from leather, hurling them across the room. Then he proceeded to beat the daylights out of Jules' trainer. When Frank finished, Jules' trainer's looks were forever altered. The young man's face was ripped and mangled. His nose was flattened against his face. One ear was hanging down, held only by a thin strip of skin. Jules lay on the saloon floor, puking from all the blows he took to his belly. He was crying in pain, frustration, and humiliation. The bartender stood stone still during the brief, one-sided, but brutal and bloody fight.
Oh, good God almighty, Morgan. You better haul your asses out of this state. The colonel is sure to come gunning for you.
I hope he does. I really hope that arrogant bastard does.
What am I supposed to do with him?
Throw him out in the road if you wanna. I don't care. Right now, pull me a beer. I'm thirsty.
You better clear out now, Morgan. And I mean right now. I'm telling you that for your own good.
Why should I?
Because a bunch of them boys drawing fighting wages from the 45, the Snake, and the Lightning Ranches like to come here for a drink nearabouts every day, that's why.
Good. I'll just wait then. Now pull me that beer.
Oh, Lord. My place is going to be shot all to pieces, I just know it.
We'll all make sure you get compensated for any damages.
What?
Paid.
Oh. How can you pay me if you're dead?
I don't plan on being dead.
Trainer yonder didn't plan on getting his gizzard stomped out neither. But he damn sure did.
You gonna pull me that beer?
Sure, right now. Don't get your dander up, Morgan. I'm just a poor store owner, that's all. I ain't got no direct hand in none of this.
Fine. I'll be sitting over there.
Frank pointed to a table by the window.
Bring the beer to me.
Yes, sir. Right away.
Jules tried to get up. He didn't make it, falling heavily back to the boards.
Oh, I hope he don't die in here. That would be bad for business, not to mention my health.
He'll probably bleed on your floor some more. But you can mop that up. He's not gonna croak.
The barkeep placed Frank's beer on the table and moved quickly back behind the counter as Frank strode over, pulled out a chair, and sat down.
Mr. Morgan?
What?
Don't you think we ought to do something for young Trainer?
What did you have in mind?
Patch him up or something.
Go ahead.
I ain't no doctor.
Neither am I. Leave him lay where he is.
You about the coldest man I ever seen.
So I've been told.
You son of a bitch!
Talking to me, Buffalo Turd?
I'll kill you!
Sure you will.
My daddy will horsewhip you and then hang you.
Oh, Lord, Morgan.
What's the matter?
Riders coming from the north. I hear them.
Good. Now it'll get interesting.
You're crazy, Morgan. They'll kill you.
I doubt it.
Frank put his empty beer down, walked to the front door, and looked out.
Only four of them.
Only four?
Help me!
Help me, boys!
They can't hear you, you pissant. Nobody's gonna help you. So why don't you just shut your dirty lion mouth?
My daddy will get you for this, Morgan.
But Frank was already on the wide porch. The snake riders reined up in front of the store and sat their saddles, staring in silence at Frank.
Any of you named Reeves or Cullen?
I'm Reeves, Morgan. What's it to you?
Where's Cullen?
Back at the ranch, if that's any of your business, which you damn sure ain't.
Where's Jules and Story and Garner?
Garner's in the bar part of the store, with ants crawling across his dead eyes. Story lit a shuck out of the country. Mama's little boy Jules is inside on the floor, where I stomped his face in and kicked a few of his teeth out.
You're a goddamn liar, Morgan. No two like you could kill Garner and make Story take water.
Kill him! Kill the bastard for me, boys. He hurt me bad.
Your play, boys.
Two of the snake hands reached for iron. Frank fired twice in less than a blink of an eye. The two snake riders who grabbed for iron tumbled from the saddle. One shot through the heart, the other in the center of his forehead. The two remaining riders, one of them Reeves, wheeled their horses and got the hell out of there. They did not look back, and Frank let them go. Frank walked back inside the saloon and up to the bar.
Now you have two more to plant. You can have their guns and whatever's in their pockets for your trouble. That sound fair enough to you?
I reckon so, Mr. Morgan.
They're horses, too, if they're not riding snake stock.
He looked down at the bloody mess that was Jules.
Now I have to figure out what to do with you.
Damn you. My daddy will get you for this.
You got a one-track mind, Jules. And you're barring me.
I wish you'd get him out of here and to a doctor, Morgan.
No. If this piece of crap sees a doctor, it won't be me taking him.
He's hurt bad.
He just can't be called a pretty boy any longer, that's all. Get up, Jules. I'm gonna send you home to your mommy and daddy.
Help me up.
I'll stand here and kick you until you get up or you die. Choice is yours.
Damn you.
Outside, pretty boy.
Jules staggered out onto the porch. Frank followed.
Over by your horse.
Jules stumbled off the porch to his horse.
Now strip, Jules. Right down to your skin.
What?
You heard me. Strip or I'll rip those fancy clothes off of you.
My dad will kill you for this, Morgan. He'll kill you for this.
I hope he tries. I ought to heat up a running iron and brand you for raping and killing that girl, you damn punk. Strip! You had this horse a long time, Jules?
Five years or so, why?
Then he knows his way home, right?
Well, sure he does. He ain't stupid.
Good. Mount up.
Frank used Jules' belt to tie the young man's hands to the saddle horn.
Have a good trip, lover boy.
He slapped the horse on the rump and watched as the animal galloped away, Jules swaying in the saddle.
He's gonna have a sore butt when he gets home. But it's probably the only justice he'll get for what he did.
You're a dead man, Morgan.
Frank turned to the bartender, now standing on the porch.
Colonel Trainer will never rest until he sees you dead. Sending Jules home like that will be the last straw, man. Are you crazy?
I've been called worse.
Frank pointed to the dead men sprawled in the dirt and horse crap in front of the store.
Better get them planted.